Record, shall I?
Oh, good.
Okay. Right, so maybe I'll just start again. Hi, I'm Lynn. I'm living with depression, and I am very grateful to this fellowship, and I'm very grateful to this meeting for allowing me to tell my story and how I got here. I sum up my depression in one sentence, which is I don't need to be perfect or invisible to be loved and accepted. I am not a burden. And those are messages that I've carried around with me from childhood. And I realized that I'm saddening myself. I'm choosing to dwell on thoughts and beliefs that make me sad, that stop me from enjoying life. And because my depression comes from my childhood, I have been basically repeating those words to myself for years and years and years and years and years, ever since I was, I think, five. I've done some inner child work, and I reckon there's an inner 5-year-old and an inner 12-year-old. The inner 5-year-old was kind of that was when I started being bullied at school. And the inner 12-year-old, I think, is where the depression comes in, because that was 7 years in. And by that point, I had 7 years of not fitting in with my teammates and my classmates, and never knowing when I was going to be welcome and not welcome, and feeling like I wasn't enough or I was too much. My father also started drinking when I was about 12. So there is sort of an alcoholic background in there as well, which I now understand is a difficult thing to grow up as a child, because there's a lack of consistency. And that's actually how I got into fellowship in the first place 9 years ago, was that I finally admitted and accepted that I was an adult child, and that I had grown up in an alcoholic background, and that as a result, I had certain ways of reacting to authority figures, that I had certain ways of looking at the world. And at the same time, about 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with ADHD and dyspraxia. So I realized I was neurodivergent, and that I don't see the world the same way as other people do. And that trying to manage my time, for example, the way that everybody else around me was managing their time, was like trying to force somebody who's left-handed into writing with their right hand. It doesn't work, and it actually creates low self-esteem, and it creates a feeling of having to not be, like, not being allowed to be myself. And that was in my early 30s, and by that point I had been in the UK for 10 years. I moved over here in my early 20s. I partly moved over here because I was leaving home, and I was leaving my background, and I left my country, and I love my country, but the people and sort of like life is a lot less, what's the word? I grew up in a desert country, and I realize now that that desert country, as beautiful as it is, I grew up in an emotional barren sort of environment as well, and that people didn't really see me and appreciate and just accept me as I was, hence the realizing that I don't need to be perfect or invisible to be loved and accepted. And I have not felt good enough, safe, loved, or okay for a very, very, very long time. And in spite of 9 years of therapy, I'd kind of get to the end of every session, and I'd still get to underneath the feeling here really is I'm not good enough. Everything that I do drives this. I'm not good enough. I talked too much. I said the wrong thing. I should have done this. I should have done that. I realized after I was in the first fellowship, I came to a point where I went to an open AA meeting to try to understand my dad, and then realized that I have my own sort of addictions. And for me, it's work. And work is kind of there for two reasons, because I'm neurodivergent, I have to work harder anyway to be able to manage to keep up with my colleagues and my friends. But at the same time, I can get myself completely lost in it, because I feel like, well, work is a safe place. I don't have to engage with my emotions. I don't have to engage with my feelings. And I, once I got that under control at the beginning of the pandemic, when I was working from home and I realized I was really going to struggle because I live alone, I needed to find a way of being able to switch that off. I needed to be able to put the work down, and I needed to be able to take it out of my head and put it aside. And that's when I realized that I'm codependent, and I have a relationship with, or I had a relationship with my higher power that was very, very punitive. And it was very much a case of my higher power was, sort of punishing, or basically would ignore me. And I realize now that that's because all the authority figures in my life growing up were kind of like that. There were a few teachers at school who really appreciated my engagement, and maybe my liveliness. And so I'm grateful to my higher power that when I was growing up, even before knowing that I had a higher power, that there were people in my life who did show me some kindness. So that kind of that realization that I needed to deal with that, and I needed to understand, because for me, I was like, well, I can't be codependent. I'm not in a relationship, when actually I wasn't in a relationship because I had such a negative self view of myself and such negative self-talk that being with other people, I would just expect them to be unkind and critical. And to be fair, that's kind of my parents' relationship. So I do have some role models in that I don't have healthy role models at home growing up at all. I think that's 10 minutes. Thank you. I saw a clock on the screen earlier. That seems to have disappeared, but never mind. So I started trying to understand how that worked. And for me, it's been a real process of discovering that not only do I have a higher power and other people have their higher power, I have a higher power. I have my own higher power. I have my own higher power that is available to me 24/7. I don't have to talk to my higher power through other people, because that's where my codependence was coming from. This idea that other people would tell me how to live my life. I didn't realize that I have my own guidance and my own understanding and my own dreams and hopes and all of those. Like, I didn't realize I had my own. And it's been a really big thing. Before the pandemic, I would blame other people for the way that I was feeling. But then here was me living in a basement flat by myself going, there is nobody here to blame. There's nobody here to say to me, I'm doing a bad job, or I'm, you know, this horrible person or whatever. And that was the realization. It was like, oh, okay, it's me. I'm doing this to myself. Nobody's here. And I have to laugh because I have a little teddy bear that I used to put on the top of the fridge. And I basically would blame him for not washing the dishes or paying the credit card bills, because I'd say, well, actually, you know, he should have done it. It's like, a teddy bear can't do that. It's definitely me. But it just gave me this way of being able to understand where I was taking responsibility and where I wasn't taking responsibility. And overthinking was a really big thing. And I realize now that I get what are called emotional flashbacks. So I'll have a thought, it'll upset me about my past, for example, or maybe about something that happened in the present. And then I'll latch onto it, and then I'll feel bad for feeling that. And then I'll be telling myself off and go, I shouldn't be feeling sad. I shouldn't be feeling angry. I shouldn't be feeling this. And instead of saying, okay, you know, I'm not feeling great. Is there something I can do, or do I need to sit with this feeling? It's been a real roller coaster, and it has taken a lot of work. I read a lot of self-help books before I finally found 12-step groups. I spent a lot of time journaling, writing. In the beginning of the pandemic, I'd spend Saturday mornings writing, because Saturday morning was a difficult time for me, because my dad would drink after he got home from work in the evenings during the week, and at lunchtime on a Saturday, because the dishes hadn't been washed. Except he wasn't drinking because the dishes hadn't been washed, but I was 12 and I didn't realize that that was the case. And I have built up this sort of background, this feeling that if my dishes haven't been washed by Saturday lunchtime, something bad is going to happen. It's like, well, no, it isn't. And I reckon that my depression is me grieving the childhood that I should have had and the healthy attention that I should have had and the healthy role models. And this realization, I tend to think of myself sometimes as an emotional orphan because I very easily slip into child-like or childhood reactions instead of going, I'm safe now. It's not to say that everything is safe and everything is good, but I had this pattern, this very limited, restricted pattern that I'd project onto authority figures, and they'd either be my mom or my dad or a teacher. And my peers and my colleagues would be my younger brother, who was really ill growing up, and he got all the attention. And this realization that I don't have to do that. I can be here now in this present moment, and I can ask my higher power for guidance. And it, when I moved house last year, I had to find a new place to live. And I wouldn't have chosen to leave where I was, but my higher power was nudging me out of the nest. And I spent a very long time searching for the right place, and I finally found it. But I had to take temporary accommodation for 2 months. So I needed to move everything out, move some things into storage, move into the new place, and then move in here. And that was the start of, I think that was the start of my grieving journey. And that's about a year before I came to
5 minutes.
DA. Sorry, 5 minutes. Yes, thank you. That was the start of kind of my journey that eventually led me to DA, because it brought me face to face with my clutter. It's brought me face to face with the things that I have not been able to let go of for years and years and years. And this realization that it's not an easy thing to let go of. And, I'm sure I've had so many people in the past to go, just go for a walk, you'll feel better. You just do this and just do this and just do this. And it's like, actually, depression is a really tough thing to budge. And being able to admit and accept that my higher power loves me with my depression, with my cluttering, with my codependency, with my work addiction is so liberating, because those are parts of myself that I was trying to pretend didn't exist. And so now I'm trying to allow myself to take that in. And instead of saying, oh, I shouldn't be feeling like this, to say, oh, actually, I'm really sorry that I'm feeling like this in a gentle, kind way. So I mentioned the inner child work, to a 5-year-old or to a 12-year-old, I'm sorry that you're feeling sad. Let me sit with you. Or, what can we do about this? And being able to have a space where I can admit that and where I can be seen has been a really big thing for me, because I realize I don't think I've stopped for breath once since I started speaking. And that's actually partly how my, not my depression, but like how my anxiety kind of manifests itself. But I found that over December and Christmas and the winter months, I was kind of hibernating, and that was fine. But then when spring arrived, I wasn't wanting to do things. And gradually, as I've got older and as I've had less energy this year, particularly a couple of medical issues, I started finding myself retreating and isolating more and more and more. And I started feeling worse about myself. And I'm a big fan of HALT, Hungry, Angry, Lonely, Tired. But the thing is that when I'm not tired, I can do the things that motivate me and help me to kind of keep going. I think my higher power, I don't say send me the depression, but like I needed to deal with these feelings. I think that's, no, that's not time. I think my higher power kind of stopped me, because I wasn't living life deeply. I wasn't connecting with my emotions and my feelings. And I think that not having the energy to be able to get on a train and go somewhere and rush around and do this and do that meant that I actually had to face myself this year and to recognize where I'm not taking action. And for me, my depression is everything that I'm not doing in my life that I could be doing that is making my life harder. So I totally can tidy up my flat, but I'm also powerless to tidy up my flat. I need my higher power's help and guidance with that. And I need to be gentle with myself because there are reasons, there are emotional reasons that I kind of need to work through to be able to get to that point. And all of my fellowships kind of tie together quite nicely. They weave together and they help me to understand that I want to live an emotionally sober life. That's really what I want. That's my aim. And I find that sort of the slowing down, the one day at a time, the doing the next right thing, I've been doing that for months. And eventually at the end of June, I had to admit that I couldn't put a happy face on it anymore. I couldn't pretend. And that's when I admitted that I was depressed and I came to this group because my sponsor in another group told me about it and it somehow resonated. Took another month of me realizing that actually I can't do this alone and I did need medication. So I went on to some medication. And then there've been a number of medical issues. And actually that's also been higher power led because each doctor's appointment led me to the next thing. So it was, it's depression and anxiety. I have palpitations. Hi. I need to look into that. Thank you. I'll wrap up. Right. I'll try and wrap up in a minute. Each of those has kind of led me to the next thing, including taking a week off work, because I find that my higher power talks to me through other people, places and things if I'm open to hearing the guidance. So I will wrap up by saying that at the moment, the slogan that's speaking to me the most is awareness, acceptance, action. I need to be aware of my depression. I need to accept my depression and myself. And then I want to take action. And with that, I will pass. Thank you very much for hearing me.